Whatever happened to the Boswell sisters?
My name is Richard Lamparsky, and I'm sitting talking to two Southern gals. I didn't say they were sisters, because the first thing I'm going to ask them, are you really sisters?
Oh, yes, I'm the wolf.
Well, I should say their names are the Boswell sisters. That is what how they were billed. But a friend of mine, was some time ago, when we were listening to some old Boswell sisters, records said, oh, I don't think they're sisters. You couldn't get three girls in one family that all sang that well.
Well, I always thought, who is that? I want to send him a call. I always thought a little the opposite. A great many people used to say they have to be sisters because our voices sound so much alike. And we had,
we couldn't have argued so much and forgot it.
I say it gratefully, more or less, that our voices did blend so well, but a great many of the musicians and the professors who teach singing and one great compliment that I think that we had was from, what was his name? He taught, anyway, arranging, and he said that that we sang true, that there were only three people in his mind that sang real true and never went off the note, and that was Caruso, and oh boy, we were flattered. The Boswell sisters and Connie Boswell, who is me, as a single singer, and we thought what was his name? Schlesinger? I knew him very well years ago.
You better think of his first name. People think it's Arthur.
Oh, no, this was a teacher. He taught arranging, and he taught Glenn Miller, as a matter of fact, arranging.
Oh, that's
and
good.
He used to use our records to teach his pupils. He used to put them on and play them at their regular speed. Then he would slow them down and show how true each harmony note was, you see, and that's the way he did it.
Well, probably one of the things that if we had a good blend of people with the female players, they thought we did, is that our voices were very, I never thought they were alike, because Connie sang one type and, you know, as soloist, but on telephones and whatnot, we used to kid people because our voices all sound identical, or I even would be fooled if I'd call from town, Martha would answer, or, you know, instead of Connie, and I would think it was Connie, their voices were so similar.
Well, now, I don't know you on the telephone, and of course, I'm sitting here looking at you so I can tell you apart, but for the benefit of the audience, the one with the heaviest Southern accent is Connie.
Really?
I think.
Yeah.
Mm. And
well,
the other
I
one who just spoke is Seth.
And it's so peculiar. I've never tried to really hold on to it. I've never tried to lose it, except when I did picture work, you know, a lot. I would try to ease down a little bit because the people with whom I was talking, they would be saying, car. Well, I probably don't imitate them very well. But I know they didn't imitate me because they used to say that I said New York, and I never said New York. I say New York. I can hear my own R in there, you know. But
you just know it's there.
Evidently, they didn't. But when I go home, that's New Orleans, so many of my friends say that I talk just about the same as I always do.
Well, I never did think I sound Southern at all, but you hear Southerners talk, you know. I sound like I'm an Eastern,
well, I
whatever
think
you
we,
want to call it.
I think that and I sound like the Yankees next to some of the people from Tennessee or Texas.
I can't understand them.
Well,
yeah,
how do you sound when you go home for a visit and then come back
sound
north?
Sound like foreigners, they tell us.
No, I sound about the same. I think I talk just about the same all the time.
Well,
really?
I think New Orleans, as a matter of fact, the dialect or the accent down there is not as pronounced
as
the Mississippians or the Alabamians.
You're both New Orleans.
Yeah.
Did you begin your career singing there?
Oh, yeah. A little like that.
Did you begin that little? Was it vaudeville?
Well, originally.
No,
well, that you don't.
No,
we started
out with music lessons. It's violin, cello, and piano.
But not
classical.
Popular. It was all
classical. And then as we got a little bit bigger, we got in. I started playing the banjo, and Connie took the saxophone. And Martha, of course, stuck to the piano.
Martha was
and
a great pianist,
then we,
really.
Then we got into the thing. Of course, we always had singing around the house. Our family was musical. My mother and father and my aunt and uncle, there were two brothers married two sisters, and they used to sing the quartet.
Were they professionals?
No, just
I
just
think they probably
own.
Would have been, but my dad settled
like
down and raised the family. And
but we were raised with music, and my dad played mandolin and guitar, and we always had music around us. But,
and
singing.
We had oodles of friends that were hot musicians, hot musicians that were much older than us, but when I was 9, 10, they used to come over to my house to rehearse, our house, and Bette and I used to sit in with the banjo and the saxophone. We were only maybe 9, 10, 11 years old, but they said we were pretty hot in those days. You know, I mean, the musicians did.
Yeah, well, Louis Prima was dying.
Louis Prima.
Was he a name at that time?
Oh, sure.
Really?
No, Louis Prima and his older brother, Leon.
Yeah, Leon.
Leon used to come over.
Tony Parente?
No, he wasn't a big name.
You know his name.
But around home he was.
Oh, who was the other one, that did come over? You know, the New Orleans people, as a rule, the jazz musicians, they like to stay down there. They're very seldom
that they leave.
They like the atmosphere.
They don't like to leave that gravy down there, I think.
Beans and rice.
Is there an atmosphere that's very conducive to music?
Oh, yeah. I think so. And I know a lot of the musicians say the same thing, you know, the boys, that after we got bigger and, left home ourselves, that many of them have come up, say, to Chicago or New York, and they've gone back down there.
I know
you get a feel, you know. I went into
They can express themselves better, I guess, down there.
Yeah, they can. We went down in Frenchtown one night while we were there. I was playing the Roosevelt Hotel there, and that's about 2 years ago. And I dropped in to see Pete Fountain, who's an old friend of ours. And, of course, he announced that I was in the audience and everybody started applauding. And I got up and sang some swing songs and everything with his outfit back of me. And it was really a ball. But, you know, I was dying to have, and I haven't played it for years, but you have that feel. I wanted to get that saxophone of mine, and I don't even have it with me. I have it here, but I don't play it anymore. And I really wanted to get with that group and start tooting that sax. I don't get that urge other places, but I go down to New Orleans, and I wanted to get with that outfit and start playing that saxophone. And I swore that the next time I go to New Orleans, I'm going to take my sax with me. And one of these nights, I'm going to drop in to see Al Hurt or one of these boys that I've known for so many years. And I'm going to take that sax. And when they ask me to get up and sing, I'm going to get that sax out. Because I play a kind of a barrel house style. You know, I play more trumpet style on sax than I do saxophone. I don't do all those variations, but I play, you know, that barrel house style.
How did they ever get you away from it long enough for you all to begin singing? When did that start?
Well, we used to play the classical music, but then when Mama gave us the banjo and sax,
the singing was the last thing. If I can tell you a funny incident, that
this is Bette talking, by the way.
When we left home, we went to Chicago, and it was sort of a break-in thing. We didn't know. We'd played around New Orleans and whatnot, but it was while we were in school, you know, and there'd be an act missing at the Orpheum or one of those things, and they'd ask us if we'd fill in, because everybody knew us, you know. We'd break records and everything else in New Orleans. So we had this offer to go on the road, so we went to Chicago. And it was one of these break-in dates, and they thought we were professionals. We weren't, actually. We were just, you know, home talent stuff.
Well, we got one of those form letters when we were playing the Orpheum Theater that said, would like to have you play the Englewood, and I think it was called the Belmont.
And we thought
it was an offer, but all performers got that letter.
It was only a break-in, you know, for the bookers to come and see what acts they wanted to book out on the different circuits. Well, anyway.
And, Bar, we talked up.
We get there, and
I quit school, and we went up there for this thing.
I even did a dance in it, too. I was a tap dancer at a boot. So we had the violoncello and piano. We started playing the violoncello and piano. This is our act. And then the banjo, saxophone, and piano. That was supposed to be our act, and the dance. And then we had
a
couple of songs. But we all got scared, you know. It was opening night. We got scared, and we did nothing. We couldn't do anything else but sing. And the manager came back and said, "Don't you girls do anything else but sing?" And that's what we made our reputation on, was singing.
Well,
but
times changed. Like, there's a new era now, you know, with the way the kids are singing.
He had us in as musicians, you know, the violoncello and piano, whatever. When we didn't do our full act, and we only sang. He said, "Don't you do anything else but sing?" So that was a funny
thing. So you continued like that, just
Yeah, well, we continued
singing
with the violoncello and piano.
We still put the instruments back in, but when we got to New York, which was about, I don't know, a year or two later, and we went on programs like the Chesterfield and all that. That's all they wanted. So we did nothing but sing. And later on, we looked back at the article that we had given to someone saying that the manager had come back and said, can't you girls do anything but sing? And yet, we really made our name as just being harmony singers.
Yeah, well, after we got so right.
Half the people later didn't even know we were musicians.
Yeah, well, like in California, we're telling about the radio show out there that we did for about 2 hours. We did everything. Played the instruments and sang, and we'd talk a little bit in between whistle, and I think everything we missed was the dance, but they didn't like that idea. That was pre-Astaire, you know. no recorded dancing. But then they sifted down, because like the records and things, they didn't want us to, you know, didn't say we don't want the instruments, but they preferred the singing, so that's how we had started on the records, which was instrumental in bringing us into New York.
And by the way, that one program that Vet is referring to in California, that went from 12 until 2 o'clock. We originally went on as part, I mean, There were five of us originally. The three Boswell sisters doing harmony songs, Russ Colombo singing, and Russ Colombo playing violin. There was a young lady on the show. I'm sorry, her name skips me now because it's been many, many years. She married, retired, and got out of the business. But she was a very fine pianist. And she played piano while Russ played the violin. And she also accompanied him when he sang. Then she did concert-type music.
There was also another little fella around the studio there that we worked with, or, you know, not the singing connection, but the working, you know, as part of our act. A little fella named Cliff Arquette.
Oh, yes. Well, we did some other shows where we were together on the show.
And
but this particular show...
He used to stand and try to break us up when, you know, we had 2 hours, and he'd be standing when we were trying to whistle or something. He'd be standing there making monkey shines out the window.
Was he as funny then?
Cliff Arquette. What does he call himself now on the...
Charlie Weaver.
Oh, Charlie Weaver, yes.
Oh, he was always funny.
Yeah.
Always.
But this particular 2 hours... the first 15 minutes would be sponsored by, some baby powder or something. And then this young lady would play a concert for about 15 minutes. Then when she went off, they'd say, and now the Boswell sisters, singing trio, and this would be maybe some soap program or bacon powder or something.
No commercials.
I'm not giving the name. And every 15 minutes, that went. Then Russ Colombo sang, and then he played fiddle, and then we eventually... got together and had sort of 15 minutes, the whole five of us. Martha would be on one piano, this young lady on another piano, and Russ Colombo. Now, I didn't bother playing piano then because we didn't need it. We had Martha at the piano and this other young lady. And later on, they decided that they could get, because we got the same money. You know, they didn't have all those union rules then. And we got the same money, Boswell Sisters, for the 2 hours that we were on. So finally, they let Russ Colombo go. And they let this young lady go, and the 15 minutes that they previously had with Madam X, why, my sister Martha filled in, because she was a great concert pianist and could also play real good jazz. So she would play 15 minutes of classical music, then Martha Vett and I sang, then Martha Vett and I do something else with the instruments, banjo, sax, and piano.
And they'd do a duet.
Then Martha and I would do piano duet, jazz numbers. Then we did whistling things. I used to whistle solos, and then Martha and Bette, we did a whole whistling thing for 15 minutes, you know. Boswell Sisters, the whistlers, you know. And for 2 hours, Boswell Sisters held that spot, and that was it. And then I did blues songs, and I did ballads.
Until they brought in the oxygen.
Yeah, until they brought in the oxygen tank, and we waltzed around with a little adrenaline or something. And that was it. And then we also added Mr. King, who was the manager out there at that time. He then got us 2 or 3 sponsors at night where we did 2 songs, 3 songs on the show. And then Martha did a character like an Amos and Andy character with Tom Brenneman. Tom Brenneman later on had one of these shows.
Did you know?
Breakfast of Fire.
Yeah. That's
Hollywood.
Right.
Martha,
but before that, she worked
as
his girlfriend. You know, like Soma Fiend. I mean, she was Soma Fiend, but you know how Sapphire was on the Amos and Andy.
Yes.
Well, Martha was Soma Fiend on Tom's show. It was called Tom and His Mule. She didn't play the mule. But she played his girlfriend. Now, she got X amount of dollars, not much, about $10 or $15 for doing that. Then I did 2 single shows a week. When I look back, I don't care how we were all teenagers, but I want to know where we got the energy to do all that. We lived at a piano home, learning new songs all the time, new blues numbers, new this, new whistling numbers, new sax numbers.
The
and
manager
all
must have been,
oh, I could
we
talk
were
on and on
a dozen, you know, getting us to do everything. We practically did the whole thing.
Yeah, we did. We saved our money. We worked very hard so that by the time we got ready to come to New York, we were able to buy a lot of lovely things and come into New York really looking and sounding and doing the right
thing.
Well,
our first program here was Rudy Vallee's program.
Yes.
You know,
he was already a
oh, yeah.
very
oh, yeah.
established
yeah.
name.
Yeah.
At
we were guest stars.
Yeah, Vallee was
our
before
first
us.
Big program.
Before we go on to Vallee and Colombo, because I'd like to talk about both of them, I think we just slipped in that name, Tom Brenneman, which really surprised me because I haven't heard that in a while.
That's
but
right.
He had a show called Breakfast in Hollywood. As a matter of fact, they made a movie about it, too. And he
yeah,
had
yeah.
an orchid away to the oldest
oh,
lady.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
he,
yeah.
And he was
putting
always
the ladies
kissing
hats
ladies.
Yeah.
And... what are you saying? A photographer's saying something.
Hedda Hopper used to come in with a new hat creation all the time.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
I don't. I remember
yes,
he was trying
right.
to put the silliest hat.
Yeah,
well,
he used to put the women's hats on, too. He'd take them and put the women's hats on. Don't you remember? He'd go
yes.
around the tables and whatnot. Yeah, he had a very good program.
Well, now on to Rudy Vallee. You came to New York and did a program with him.
Yeah,
well,
Fleischman News. Go ahead, Bud. If I open my mouth, I forget to shut it, honey.
Fleischman or Camel? I thought it was Camel. Was it Camel? I'm still mixed up here on the...
No, Camel was another show.
That's the show we
had in San Francisco.
Whatever it was, it was Vallee's show that we went on. We did the show, and then all three of us got the flu.
He was the very top, so...
Oh, yes. This was the big program then. And we were, felt very grateful and proud that we got on this program, our first shot in New York. And then shortly after that...
Yes, we did. Harry preceded us in. I have to bring Harry in because it's part of the Boswell sister story, part of my story. Harry Leedy, that's LEEDY, like in yesterday, he was Boswell sister's manager until... Martha and Beth got married and decided to get out of show business. And then later on, Harry and I got married. So Harry is still my manager. He is my husband. He was manager at the time, and he came into New York first, and he's a real good talker. And as a matter of fact, that's why we don't have him here, because if he started talking, we'd never get a chance. But he came
you
in
can
and
say
sold...
say that again, with you.
And he sold Vallee a bill of goods that the Boswell sisters were pretty terrific, and he had a couple of records under his arm, which is another episode. Most people... so many things have happened in our lives. When people say, what was your overnight success story? Like someone comes in, sees a girl, say, come for an audition, boom, you're a star. Our career was never made that way. It was one of those gradual... going up the rung of the ladder, one after the other. And Harry did have the benefit of two recordings that he brought into New York and was able to show to the people in Sal and say that we looked good and have photographs and all that. And my hair was dark then. I'm a blonde now, but we all had the hair below
television. You didn't have to say that.
Yeah, a lot of mine. And all of our hair down below the shoulders. People used to think we were triplets. And so I guess if you go by newspapers and what fans and everything said, we made a good appearance. We were all very young, and we sang good and true, and we had a different style. I don't know if you know this, Richard, you're rather young, but we revolutionized the whole style of not only singing trios, but my single work as well, and also musicians, because when Tommy Dorsey and all those boys, now they were great, we didn't teach them to play, so don't get me wrong, but when they played for us, we sang and we gave them certain little breaks and things that we wanted them to do back of us that made them sound completely different on our records than they did anybody else's records. And yet they recorded for Crosby, Francis Langford, Martin Downey, everybody who recorded back in the 30s. But if you ever hear any old records, now I realize everything sounds dated as time goes on. But if you listen, you will hear that Jimmy Dorsey, Tommy Dorsey, Bunny Berrigan, and all those fellas, though they were great individually, they played as a group completely different.
Well, we didn't back just record. We had what you might call real jam sessions. We had a ball recording. All the musicians, as a matter of fact, nearly all of them worked with us. When I say worked with us, I don't mean that egotistically, but because we were the name and they hadn't organized their orchestras.
None of them had orchestras.
They were spot men, Glenn Miller, the Dorseys,
Bunny Berrigan.
Bunny Berrigan.
Bernoulli and Lang.
Benny Goodman.
Audie Shaw.
All these
fellas played with us.
The whole crowd played back of us. Not all at one time, but, different sessions. And when we had them, we had what you might call a real jam session.
And Joe Tardo on the bass, who was great and still is good.
And of course, then you didn't have to worry about the union, the time, the overtime, whatnot. And we'd be there sometime 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, and the boys just having a ball.
And don't forget Johnson Moore.
And afterwards, we'd get into doing our own fun then.
Hey, don't
forget
Chauncey Morehouse on the drums and also Ray
Bedell.
Yeah. Oh, well, if we started mentioning names, we'd go from here to tomorrow at the same time because they're all terrific musicians.
That was fun to record. I don't know because I haven't recorded in a long time, but that was fun to record in those days. I really had fun with it. Turned out real good.
I've always thought it was very surprising, a little sad that Russ Colombo isn't very well remembered.
Well, thanks to the disc jockeys, they do every now and then play Russ Colombo's records, or some of the newer brood will come around and they'll sing a song, and then they
but
will.
He's not remembered.
That he did it. No, he's not remembered.
He's not
like
remembered.
Some of the others, you're right.
No, I mean Libby Holman, Ruth Etting, all the people who they went on longer than he did, but. I think there's even more reason to remember Russ Colombo because his ending was very dramatic and very sad. And of all of the records that I have of that period, And maybe it's unfair to compare them, but I have Bing Crosby of that period, and I have Gene Austen, mm-hmm. and I have Rudy Vallee.
Well, of course, Bing, don't forget, Bing carried on and was just the biggest, and still, when you say Bing Crosby, you know, that's like saying George Washington. You have to know the name because he came along, and now his kids are all active, and Bing has a lovely family now, his second family. Unfortunately, little Dixie, his first wife, passed on, but he has a beautiful life, and Bing is very active in golf and raising horses and all that. So he's known, but Russ Colombo just went out.
Then when he's talking about that, Russ had it going for him, you know, because he was more or less a forerunner of Bing, really. He had the brakes going for him.
He was better established than Bing Crosby at the time of his death, isn't that right?
Originally, yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Which a lot of people, I think, forget.
But I don't know why... It might have been because...
And speaking of Bing, have we mentioned before? I don't know, in the conversation. We talk so fast and everything.
I love it. Yes,
yeah,
don't you?
Well, I do then. But speaking of Russ, Boswell Sisters and Russ Colombo were in the picture called
Moulin Rouge.
With Constance Bennett. I forget now some of the others that were in the picture, but we were in that picture.
But
you're looking right through me.
No.
Get with me.
No.
I know what you're thinking of.
I'm thinking of
Lautrec. No, I thought you were thinking of Moulin Rouge with Lautrec. That's the newer one.
No, I know.
But the original one, Boswell Sisters, Russ Colombo, Constance Bennett. Not in that order. Constance Bennett was a tremendous name in pictures at that time.
It might have been just trying to fathom why Russ's
Constance
name
Bennett
wasn't
is still a tremendous name, but I mean,
well,
she was
well known and I mean, you know, because Bing keeping on, that's quite understandable. But it might have been because of that tragedy that people sort of hush-hush, you know?
Well, I mean, it wasn't a scandal, really.
No scandal.
Such as Ruth Ettinghead, for instance, and she's extremely well-remembered, and her records still sell very well.
Well, I think, too, the reason she's remembered as well, too, don't forget that Doris Day, certainly
that's
one of our top gals, they didn't call it the Ruth Etting story.
No, but it was.
But they called it...
Love Me or Leave Me.
Love Me or Leave Me.
And it was a very good picture.
And,
it was successful.
And, of course, her husband, that they called Colonel Snyder, he's the one that shot...
Mo the Gimp.
He shot the...
Pianist.
The pianist.
His name was Bloom.
Who was with... Well, it was a big story.
Yes.
And James Cagney played the part of Colonel Snyder. And it was a tremendous story.
Funny thing, I didn't see that
and
picture.
It was in color.
It on TV.
It was in color. It had all the new things. And Doris Day was adorable in it. And... my friend James Cagney was just sensational.
Well,
I think the only thing that I noticed that they did wrong in the whole picture, they had Cagney limp on the wrong leg.
Is that right?
Yes, sir.
Maybe they shot from the wrong angle.
How is it you remembered that?
Oh, because I know Colonel Snyder. I see him all the time when I go to Chicago.
Someone told me he had a laundry there.
No.
Is that right?
No, he never had. That was a mistake. I think they had that in the picture, but he did not have a laundry. That's another little error that they made. But
what is he doing now?
Oh, he works for the, something to do with the state.
Well,
he's a very interesting person to talk to. Oh, he can tell you so many stories.
I should think so.
Yeah.
The interview with the Boswell sisters did not end at that point. It ran a little over, about 10, 15 minutes over, as a matter of fact, and I thought it was going so well that I just hated to edit it down to fit a one-half-hour show. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play the rest of the interview for you on next week's program. So next week we'll have an unusual program in that we'll have not one, but three guests. The first will be the great Gildersleeve, the original Harold Perry, who I've been promising you now for some time. And then after his talk, we will hear the rest of the interview with Connie and Vet Boswell.
This is WBAI in New York City, the station that is sponsored by People.
A different show, because my interview of last week with the Boswell sisters ran a bit over, about 15 minutes over to be exact. And I felt it was so good, I didn't want to edit it down to fit into a half an hour space. So we're going to continue it on tonight's program. Therefore, we will begin with the continuation of whatever happened to the Boswell sisters, Connie and Vet, and then immediately following that, you'll find out whatever happened to Harold Perry, the great Gildersleeve. So here we go with Whatever Happened to the Boswell Sisters, Part 2.
Were there any other trios at the time that you hit it big? Weren't you the first?
Well, no, there were a great many heroes before Boswell Sisters really came on the scene. But The biggest of the trios before we came on were called the Brock Sisters, B-R-O-X, I think it is. A lovely trio. They sang very high. But they were more or less what you call a featured trio. In other words, in some of the Irving Berlin shows or Ziegfeld shows or what have you. I know they were in several of the Irving Berlin shows. They'd have Eddie Cantor, the star, and somebody else and so on. And then the girls would come out like with a great big hat that would cover three people, and then the hat would flip back
more
and
of a show,
they would do special songs. Exactly. Now, they were featured. We were the first who came along who became a big star name like a Jolson, Sophie Tucker, Eddie Cantor, Boswell Sisters. You didn't have that before. The Brock Sisters,
they weren't a regular.
They were wonderful. They were a lovely trio, but they sang high, and all their arrangements were made more or less in the orthodox way of making the trio harmony songs. You know, the parts that were put together. When we came on, I said that a little while back. We did revolutionize. We had a lot of fun one night sitting around a whole bunch of real close friends and musicians, and we dug out a lot of records. The Revelers, who were a quintet or sextet,
quartet,
male singers. Then we had Duncan Sisters, who were duet. Then we picked out some Keller Sisters and Lynch. That was two sisters and a boy.
James
Mountain, and later on became a big singer. He was with a group, you know, at one time.
Yes,
when I was
Crosby
a little girl.
Was at one time.
Yeah.
Rhythm boy.
Yeah, that's right. And then you had Keller Sisters and Lynch and several others that were less known. Keller Sisters and Lynch were very big. They were known, and so were Brock Sisters. But when we came on, if you listen to Boswell Sisters back in the early 30s, 31, and you listen at that same time when we came on the scene, Keller Sisters and Lynch, Brock Sisters, the Rhythm Trio, Crosby, all those, they were completely different from the way we sang. Now, if you bring it up right to even your rock and roll singers, if you would say, well, who do the rock and roll singers sound like of yesterday? They've got their own style, and they everything moves ahead. But you couldn't say the hot singers of today, the swing really good trios and quartets of today, and single singers, sound like Ruthetting or sound like Brock Sisters or something. You'd have to say
it's
they're in the Boswell Sister groove.
It's
it
kind of
be.
A comparison to the waltz and the twist. We were the twist.
that would be a completely different
style.
And that is just not me saying it, but it is proven on record.
You didn't mention the Cherry Sisters anywhere.
I don't know what
they did. I don't know.
I've heard about them, but they used to have the act where they used to put the screen up because people would throw things
out.
Well,
I heard from an old a booking man. He used to book for vaudeville, Gus Mountain Circuit.
Was that his name?
Yeah. Gus Sometime, and or maybe it was Fanchon Marco. But anyway, he used to book for them, and he said that the Cherry Sisters got, I think it was $7.50 a week with net, and $12.50 without a net.
Right.
Uh-huh.
I never thought, but they were two, I think, weren't they?
Were there two?
I don't know whether they sang or what they did, but I know the gag was always...
They both passed away.
Right. They always had things thrown at them. But they made a fortune by being bad,
I wonder if
guess.
There are any records of the Cherry Sisters.
I don't know.
That I never heard.
I would love
heard.
To have one.
Yeah, I would too.
I'd like to hear
I would
too.
Love to have had it.
Did
he said they
ever make
were
any?
Very serious.
Oh, he said they didn't make any.
He said they were very serious about their art.
Uh-huh.
And I said, well, how could they be, you know, being hit with things every night? Mm. He said, no, they said that it was professional jealousy.
Oh,
they
yeah.
always said that.
That's funny.
Wish I could rationalize
that. Yeah, well, I thought maybe they might have known all this and figured this is a good way to make a living, you know?
No, he said they were dead serious.
Oh, they were serious. Well, they're like that, you ever hear about that Madame Jenkins, I think it is? The one that
Madame Foster Jenkins.
Yeah.
Fortunately, she has been recorded.
Yeah, I have some of her records. They're terrific. The Bell Song.
Unbelievable.
Oh.
I never heard that.
Oh, that's very funny.
You haven't?
No.
Oh, you must.
Oh, she does, and she's dead serious about it.
Completely.
Wasn't the story that her husband used to buy all of the seats for
the Bell Song
theater and whatnot?
I know her name, but I never heard the Bell Song. Wherever I've been, I'll
sing
it.
You've never
clothes.
Heard it until you've heard it by a Madame Foster Jenkins.
It's the only way to hear it, believe
the
me.
The only way. let's get back to Russ Colombo, if you don't mind, because
all
that
right.
told me a story. A little bit earlier before we began recording, of how he was going to come over that night and make spaghetti.
Yeah, well, he had, you know, been over to our house. He's
from New Orleans.
Yeah,
right?
He was from New Orleans.
Oh, I don't know whether Russ Colombo's from New Orleans or not.
I thought he was. I'm sure he was.
I don't think so, but he might have been.
Well,
that
I
can't
sure
remember.
Was.
That's possible, yeah.
Well, anyway, he had been over to the house, you know, on other occasions, but
He's good, too.
It was either the night before or the night that he was had the accident that he was coming. We were going to have spaghetti supper. He was going to cook. And it was either the night he was coming the night before or coming that night when the accident happened. But, well, we were quite, as I said, Connie was telling before, we worked with, or he worked with us, I don't know how you figured it out, on the radio station. You know, he'd come in and we'd be singing, he'd
do with each
legato.
Other at that time.
Nobody
would
do a long legato in the back with the fiddle and whatnot, you know. So we were quite friendly with him. And it was a big shock to us, and we'd done the picture with him, too, you know,
Moulin Rouge.
It was a terrific shock to hear that this had happened. That, you know, that the gun had gone off. I think it was the gun that went off.
Yes, he was a gun collector, as I recall reading.
It ricocheted
tragic.
Off the mantle.
It was a tragic thing.
Killed him.
The bullet hit the mantle and came back.
He was a handsome lad, too.
And he was so much fun, good sense of humor. Of course, they always tied him up romantically. They'd try to tie him up with Garbo and tie him up with this person and that. But Russ, he was a very handsome man. Boy, really.
I always thought he looked a lot like Valentino.
Yes, certainly
that type.
In that groove,
yeah. Very much that type. The dark, you know, slick hair. Mm-hmm.
And such a beautiful voice, the tone quality.
I have a lot of his records, and oddly enough, as I think I was telling Beth before you came in, he doesn't date at all.
No. I've heard
not at all. Maybe the arrangements of the orchestration a little, but his voice isn't, have an odd style or a dated in any way.
No, it sounds
it
good.
Is.
Sometimes you can detect a little of the, old type of music that's back of him.
Well,
you know,
a certain
it's way
it's
recorded
years,
and
it
a certain
sound.
The sound
but
alone is
he
a different
himself,
sound
if you could take the background out and put something that would be a little more modern, he sounds very good.
Yes, you know, he's very much in the same school as. Jones boy, was Jack Jones?
Jack Jones,
singing today, or Perry Como, any of them. Well, it's a shame, and that's a very sad story, but I didn't want to mention it because a lot of people are not familiar, I think, with
Russ
Colombo, unfortunately.
That so few people recall his name, you know.
The life stories that they turn out on screen keep certain people alive, like the Dolly sisters. A great many people wouldn't remember. They're way, way before our time. They're before Bing's time. They're before Rudy Vallée's time. But people remember them, certain people do, because they made the picture, and then every once in a while they're running on the screen, and you remember the Dolly sisters.
Yeah.
Dolly sisters were two dancers.
One lives right here in New York.
Yes.
One has passed away. I believe it's Rose.
Yeah, I saw one the other night at some big affair or something. Where was it? Rolled up at one of the places. I saw her.
Oh, I'd love
Rose
to
meet
her.
Rosita Dolly.
Is it? They were Hungarian, I believe.
Yeah.
Well, I've never met them, I or her. I would.
I never have either. Connie,
yes, I know the one.
The Dolly sisters. I don't know how I'd come to the Boswell sisters and end up speaking about the Dolly, about the Dolly sisters. I read a little story about you in one of the books on radio that I have, that you were one of the first big radio names to switch from NBC to CBS and sort of were the first ones who gave CBS any prestige at that time because they really didn't have stars.
I've forgotten about that. Is that about right?
You're credited with it.
I have to ask Harry once in a while. His memory's better than mine. But I remember lyrics and songs. But boy, if you give me a telephone number, give me that pad and pencil quick.
Yes, we were. I don't recall.
I know we were one of the first I know to start the Decca Recording Company. Jack Capp was head of Brunswick at that time, and when he went over and started the Decca Recording Company, he took Bing Crosby as the male single singer. He took Connie Boswell, yours truly, as the female singer, Boswell Sisters as the harmony group, female, Mills Brothers as the male group, Victor Young, Russ Colombo, and maybe one or two more. And those were the spokes of the wheel of Decca in the beginning. And then later, others came. Ink Spots and, you know, the different ones that followed the, different single singers and different groups, different bands. But at that time, those were the main spokes in the Decca wheel.
When did the sister group break up, when Beth and Martha decided to get married?
Well, tell you the truth, I always just think about it as being yesterday, for some reason, because we always...
We were like the old...
We hear our records
just
every
faded
night.
Away.
Yeah, like old generals just faded away. Well, first of all, Martha and Beth got married and decided that they were going to get out of show business because their husbands were not in show business. and Bette and Martha both felt that they wouldn't have a home life or a marriage life, and certainly not for their husbands if they were on the road all the time. My case was a little different. I married Harry, who was the manager, show business. We go all over the United States, Europe, Cuba. I mentioned Cuba. We haven't gone lately, but we were there just before the revolution, and believe me, I had nothing to do with it.
Well, now, is it going to happen? We've been talking about how hard it would be for you to get back in the swing of things. Any possibility you might team up with Connie again?
Oh, I don't know. Are you up to my standards?
Well, I don't like resting too much, so take it the way you want it. No, I tell you, I have really talked to Vet about coming out of retirement. I don't believe Vet has at least said that she doesn't think that she would like to get back in show business as far as traveling around and playing, like, as much as she likes going home, New Orleans, playing in New Orleans, and then the next thing you know, you're on a plane and maybe going down to Mexico or someplace, or Europe, you know, Paris or something. The trip, fine, but to have to leave, first of all, but doesn't like flying. I'm not too keen on being in the air, but I do fly a lot when I have to make dates. You can't make them any other way. And so Bette has said that she didn't think she'd like to get back in it that way, but to maybe do a spectacular, a 60-minute show or a 90-minute show where...
I figure I'm going to do it, I'll do it right.
Yeah, where she would get back in the swing of things and we would do a spectacular.
You must mean like we're doing today. This is going to be a radio spectacular. You've been listening to the Boswell Sisters Show, and I was the guest today. Uh-huh. I had a few questions I wanted to ask,
please,
but I think we're out of time.
Oh, come on.
So, no, I'm just kidding. It's been a lot of fun, and actually you answered them
you're
all
kidding,
before.
You're kidding, then smile.
Oh, you have to ask Bette something, because when you ask me a question, I keep thinking of things that happen and I keep branching off. You know, you ask for the trunk of the tree and you get all the branches and all the leaves. That's the way I go.
I always tell kind of her mind acts like Harry Rich's eyes. You know how they go round and round? That's funny.
Please ask another question. Let her go.
No, I do. I want to thank you both very much for allowing me to appear on your program today. And it's been very interesting. I'll come back again sometime.
Will you do that,
I will.
Richard?
Oh, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.